Hello everyone, welcome to the Art of Selling podcast. Today's another episode, and on the show we talk about the best kept sales secrets that can help you sell more stuff to more people. And over the last couple of years, we spent close to R1 million learning from some of the best marketing gurus and business coaches out there. And today we're sharing that information with you for free. There's no catch, just leave your ego at the door and bring an open mind and just maybe try some of these practical tips in your own business and let us know what happens. In studio today, I have Gilbert Kompakwe.
Thank you for having me, Jay.
How's it, my friend? Lucky, man. Good. So, listen, Facebook ads. Obviously, everybody, I think, knows that it is a medium that you should be using. I think 3 or 4 years ago, when we started the agency, we're now in year six. I still recall that we had to convince people. You know, we had to really spend hours explaining to them why it's worth spending money on Facebook ads. Today, things are a little bit different. Today, we don't have to do much convincing. People know that they should do it. But I think the problem is people are not getting it right. And they're blaming Facebook and Meta and all the changes around the platform for their lack of success. So I want to talk about Facebook ads today, specifically how you can sell more stuff to more people using Facebook ads, but particularly unpack some of the biggest mistakes that people make when it comes to running Facebook ads. I'm sure that's going to help some people out there. And maybe let's just start with some of the things that come to mind, the top mistakes that you think people make when it comes to running their ads.
Yeah, so a couple of mistakes that I've noticed, and that is looking at the wrong metrics. Looking at the wrong metrics in the sense of what your end goal is, and looking at those indicators to help you understand how far off or how close you are to actually reaching your goal. So it's one, looking at the wrong metrics, and two, not having a way to even measure anything in particular from a data standpoint, because what you can't measure, you can't scale or grow, is what I always say. So one, not having actually something in place, i.e. the Facebook pixel, to actually measure the success of your campaigns. Two, not looking at the correct metrics that are ideally tying into the end goal or end result that you're looking at, whether you're lead gen or you're an e-commerce store. And three, not getting the marketing messages right as well in your ads, because they don't resonate with the audience that you're targeting. Those three things are just top of my mind. One of the most crucial part of what it comes down to when mistakes are being analyzed from a Facebook side.
Yeah, and I think you can't really improve anything if you're not tracking, and you can't. You're saying like they might not even get the message right, but there's no data that will tell them that they're getting it wrong.
Yeah,
so exactly. It's like you're playing a guessing game. You're flying blind. It's like you're flying a plane somewhere, but you're blindfolded, or you're flying at night and the radar's off and you have no idea where you're going. And that's really how most people run their ads, because I think it's safe to say that most smaller to medium-sized business owners would boost posts and hope for the best. You know, we've spoken about lead generation in a previous episode. We've spoken about lead forms on WhatsApp and Facebook messengers. But the problem is a lot of small businesses would boost a post and drive people into WhatsApp, drive people into Facebook Messenger, maybe even create a lead form and get some decent leads from it, or decent amount of leads from it. But they have no idea on whether the leads that they're getting, the cost of those leads, can be improved or not. They have no idea on whether it could be scaled or not. They have no idea on whether they actually wasting their money or getting value for money. The only thing they measure is money in versus money out. And the problem with by only measuring those two metrics is that you have no idea on what to do in order to ensure that you get more money out should you struggle to do so. So it's like people go, I'm spending money on Facebook, I'm not getting it back, so I'm going to stop. That's what most people feel, right? It's like, I'm spending money on Facebook, I'm not getting much back, I'm going to stop. As opposed to going, I'm spending your money on Facebook, I'm not getting back what I want. What could be the issue?
Where do I manage? Where do I tweak? Where do I optimize?
What am I doing wrong?
Absolutely.
And I think that is what we should be asking ourselves. And the only way to do that is to start tracking and to start measuring things accordingly. And that's why we have a Facebook pixel, something that you put on your site. That pixel in itself will give you better clarity on what's actually happening with your ads, And at the end of the day, you can start measuring the metrics. But then the next thing that you mentioned is that it's all good and well to have the metrics. But I think most people look at one metric only, or they look at the wrong metrics. So I've seen many times people go, oh, but my ROAS is low. I need to pause this ad. Have you asked yourself why the ROAS is low on that ad specifically? As opposed to just pausing the ad, have you asked yourself, why is the ROAS low? Why is the cost per acquisition high? Why is the CPL high? And that is where we need to adapt our mindset and ask ourselves, how many metrics should we actually be measuring to paint a story that we can understand that will tell us what's wrong and what needs to be improved?
Yeah. And I think to help break down, you know, the number of metrics or what metrics as well to be focusing on is, you know, in some cases we might find ourselves saying, oh yeah, but my engagement is good in these ads. They must be doing really well. Okay, that's one aspect. Your engagement, you're getting a lot of engagement. That's great. But how many people are adding to cart? How many people are initiating a checkout? How many people are ultimately making the purchase? Because you're just looking at one aspect of it. It only just means that people are engaging with your ad. Mm. It doesn't mean that they're actually taking the action you want them to take. So if they're not taking the action that you want them to take, i.e. the first stage is, if you're an e-commerce store, right? The first stage is to actually get them to add to cart. And if those are not happening, then we need to analyze, wait, but why is my ad getting engagement, but I'm not getting anybody even adding to cart? Could there be something wrong with my website? Could there be a friction point around the ability for someone to easily add something to cart? Maybe there's a lot of pop-ups that are blocking the view. Maybe on mobile, there's too many things happening and the person can't click checkout or add to cart because there's just a lot of distractions happening. Or maybe there's a lot of pop-ups. So it's understanding that there's more variables and more metrics that you need to look at. But I always look at it as the metrics that you should be looking at are the ones that are closest to the action you want. So if you're an e-commerce store and you want to generate sales, then you need to look at what is closest to the sale, and that is actually initiating a checkout. Mm. And if you're not getting any initiate checkouts, then it's a question of, but wait, why am I not getting any initiate checkouts?
And what is closest to initiated checkout? An add to cart.
Yes.
So the question is now, why am I not getting add to carts? And the closest to the add to cart is landing page views. And that is like, why am I not getting the landing page views? Because I'm getting the likes and the comments and the shares, but I'm not getting people to actually go to the page or as many as I want to. And what I'm hearing you say, and this is so crucial, is that re-engineering the actual journey.
Yes.
And then setting up specific metrics to measure to understand where we're falling short in the journey from a marketing and a messaging standpoint.
Yeah.
So it's looking at it going, if you're an online store business owner, then this is obviously the best example, is, well, I'm going to run my ads and I first need to understand that what's the first thing that needs to happen? People need to see my ads and then they need to stop. And look at it and pay attention to it and click on it. Okay, so the metrics that we want to potentially unpack there would be your CTR, your click-through rate, and your link click-through rate. Okay, because this is, yeah, exactly. What's the difference, right? So it's understanding that the CTR in itself, that is the amount of people that have seen the ad versus the amount of people that have clicked on the ad. And that needs to be about 1% or more, ideally. If it's less than that, then it actually means that people are not paying attention to the ad. It's just not good enough to get them to stop. And many reasons for that could be because of the fact that it might not be resonating with them. Maybe you're targeting the wrong audience. Maybe your messaging is off. Maybe your offer is not good enough. These are the things that you've highlighted now earlier. From a healthy CTR standpoint, the next question is, how do the link click-through rate, how healthy is that? And that should be around 60 to 70% of the actual CTR. So if the CTR is 1%, then your link click CTR should be at least 0.6 to 0.7%. Because what people are going to do is they're going to stop, but not everybody, and they might click to enlarge the photo. They might click like, they might click comment, they might click share, but they might not click straight through to the site. And ideally you want a really high percentage of people to look at the ad and obviously click through. So that's why you measure link click-through rates. The next thing would then be landing page views and then add to carts. and then initiate checkouts, and then the actual sale.
Yeah.
So those are the metrics that you want to measure. And those metrics, by measuring them each individually and collectively, you can get a better understanding of what you might be doing wrong at the end of the day. So tracking and measuring is obviously extremely crucial. If from a lead generation standpoint, we can elaborate a little bit further. That might, you can maybe give us an indication of what that might look like.
Yeah. So from a lead generation point of view, your ultimate goal is to generate leads. So here, what you want to then be doing is, all right, very similar actually, because I'm setting up an ad, my ad's going to start running. I'm also looking at the click-through rates because I need to know that they're actually stopping and paying attention to my ad. So the same applies. You still want to have a healthy click-through rate, as you've mentioned, 1%, then the link click-through rate ideally would be anywhere between, 0.6 to 0.7% of that. Then what you also want to be looking at actually from a lead point of view is how many people are actually opening up the lead form as opposed to the landing page view. Unless, of course, you're sending people to the website, that's different. But let's, for argument's sake, keep it on lead forms. Lead forms, you need to then have a look and see how many people are actually opening your lead form. And you've actually got this ability to do so with Facebook, because Facebook even allows you to target people that have opened but didn't submit, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to be looking for how many people have submitted, how many people have opened but didn't submit, right? And how many people have actually stopped to see my ad in the first place, and how many people have clicked. And I would also go as far as to say, what is the cost per click? Because there, what you're looking at is, as opposed to looking at landing page views, you're looking at the clicks and the cost per click to get a measure of how much it's costing you in terms of expense. So again, if your CPC, the cost per click on that ad, keeps going up, we need to now ask ourselves, wait a minute, why is this going up? Could it be the audience? Maybe the audience is wrong now. Mm. Could it be that, maybe that audience has become is a lot more competitive, or maybe the messaging is wrong and we're not resonating the way we thought we were. So that cost per click gives you that sort of indication. And then, maybe we need to actually test a different copy, or maybe it's the offer is not resonating. Maybe we need to try a different offer. And those are the metrics that you might want to be looking at when it comes to a lead generation point of view.
Yeah, I love it. And I think obviously ultimately everything comes down to the cost of the acquisition. From a lead generation standpoint, it will be the cost of the lead. It will be on an online store perspective, it will be the cost of the sale. And then the amount of money that you make back, which will be the ROAS. Is the ROAS healthy, the return on ad spend? There are metrics like POAS, which, we recently dived into for ourselves with some really cool metrics and tools that we use in order to get a better understanding of the profit on our ad spend as well. It's like, what are we spending in terms of rands and what are we getting back? But also ultimately, what percentage of that we get back is profit? And how much more of that can we then put back into the marketing to further scale the campaign to make more profit, which is pretty cool. So I think you touched on it earlier. Messaging is obviously super crucial. It's usually the reason why you're not getting the cost per click that you would ideally want, or cost per landing page view. And yeah, there are things like the audience that might be wrong. It might be that you're targeting the wrong people with the wrong message. But ultimately, if the message was right, that audience would have most likely done okay. So considering that you're selling the right product to the right audience, let's pretend that you've nailed that. Let's talk about some mistakes that people make when it comes to the actual messaging of the ad, and the three things that people maybe need to do. Because in my mind, I'm like, what are the three things people actually see on the ad that conveys the message? And that's really the creative, the headline, and the copy of the ad itself. And when I say the copy, I mean the actual blurb on top of the ad. Creative, the headline, and the blurb. So in essence, those are the three things that you have to your advantage to convey the message. So if we say that the message is not resonating, we're technically referring to those three things.
Yes.
And the question would be like, what are the simple mistakes that people make around these three elements when it comes to the messaging?
So if I have to look at copy, specifically copy, so the headline of your ad, and this is before someone clicks see more. I'm sure we all understand that usually there's like two lines there, and then it says see more. a lot of the mistakes happen where the main offer is put at the bottom of the copy, maybe in paragraph 3. And I have to click see more to get to that. But what happens is, if you want to get people's attention, you ultimately want to start with the offer, right? Because, and who the offer is for. 30% off sunglasses, or 30% off skin therapy.
Laser treatments.
Laser treatment. 30% off laser treatment. All right. 30% off Botox.
Gotcha.
But what I'm saying is, we need to make sure that whatever the offer is, the discount and who it's for, that shouldn't be far down. I have to click see more to see that, because then you've automatically, I don't even know that you're actually speaking to me. Unless, of course, then the image and the creative is doing that.
Yeah.
But if it's not, it's important that we articulate the offer and who it's for immediately right off on that headline, before someone has to click see more in order to uncover whether this is actually for me or they're talking to somebody else.
I suppose two ways to look at it is that that's more if you're pushing the actual offer into people's faces, trying to get them to understand the value of what you're actually trying to offer, which is more of a push strategy. But there might be a pull strategy where if you don't want to put the offer, or you don't have an amazing offer, or you, you know, just feel too sleazy to highlight it in that way, which you shouldn't. But if you do, there's obviously other elements that you can leverage, like curiosity, to get people to click more. So it's not necessarily that, you know, you need to put the, obviously you have to put the offer there in order to get people to go, okay, I understand the value. But how I look at it is essentially that putting the offer in those first two sentences is a great way to get people to purely understand the value of what you're actually putting together for them. But outside of that, there's also elements like curiosity that you can leverage to get people to further engage with the ad and get a better understanding of what you're actually trying to say. So to touch on that, there's like a push-pull mechanic. You can push by putting up the offer, getting people to understand this is for moms, get 20% off, you know, cellulite treatment, whatever the case may be. And then alternatively, there's more of a curiosity angle, more of a pulling angle. You know, if you want to create curiosity, make sure that you those two first sentences are the most important. And that's the point that you're trying to make. But around the nuances around that is that you can push by putting the offer in, or you can pull by creating curiosity. I think that's what I'm trying to allude to.
Two different strategies, right? And to be fair, the push one is more for the impulsive buyers when you put that offer up front, which again, in any market, is probably like 5% in any given market.
And this is why testing is so important, because you want to test what works for you and your audience.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, I think from my side, though, that's to touch on that point. That's kind of like how, you know, we'll round it off in terms of the marketing message aspect of the ad itself.
Yeah, I mean, also there's also the headline and the creative that's super crucial. And some would argue that the headline is the most important thing, because it's the first thing that grabs people's attention. I would argue that the creative is the thing that takes up the most real estate, and therefore it is the thing that people pay attention to first.
Absolutely, particularly especially on social media, because to be honest, we've all been conditioned to go onto social media expecting some sort of visual that we're actually going to be engaged. Instagram, I mean, what is that? That's a platform purely for visual creators and content. And so when you look at it, the creative is what gets people's attention first. And if you can articulate yourself well enough in that creative to help the consumer understand what it is, you've already won. The headline is support the copy. The copy is supporting what they're actually looking at in the creative. And then the headline is there to ultimately increase that link click-through rate that we've been talking about, because then they immediately understand, ultimately put all three together, you understand the whole marketing message that's being portrayed to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, we talked about measuring, tracking, and improving your message ultimately. So if we have to unpack this and conclude, then if you're putting your pixel on the side and you're measuring, then it means that you're tracking. If you're tracking, you should be testing. And if you're testing, then it means that you should be changing these things. Mm-hmm. So you can test your creative. You can have a video. You can have a still image. You can have a carousel. You can have a single image. You can have whatever you want to, essentially. And you'll be able to see what is actually grabbing people's attention the best. And you can do that, you know, by dynamic creatives, essentially. By looking at the breakdown, you can see what's actually grabbing people's attention. And then after people stopped scrolling, they would look to the headline to further kind of like get an idea of what this is all about. And if that sparks enough curiosity, this is just my interpretation of it. People go to the top of the headline. But there are people, and a lot, this is up for a massive debate, and I don't know if it's been actually tangibly, objectively tested. It's like, what do people see first? In my mind, it just makes sense that they see the creative first because it takes up the most space. And if you have a video that's moving or GIF or a still image or a slideshow, it moves. And whatever is different is what draws attention. So if you're scrolling through your newsfeed, you're used to seeing white space and text and a little bit of visuals. But if there's something that flashes, something that moves, that's going to grab your attention and people will stop. So the next thing is, okay, cool. Can I create a captivating headline that can further support and create a sense of curiosity or get people excited to click? And if people don't really decide to do that, they might go to the blurb or the copy to further read of whether I'm going to be wasting my time if I'm actually clicking through. Because people go creative, headline, copy. But there are a lot of people who go copy, creative, headline, or creative, blurb, copy, and then headline. Like, I don't think there's a perfect sequence, but all three of them are crucial and all three of them needs to be tested, period.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking about what you're saying, and it's like, also the platform, because if you're on Facebook, you see actually copy, then creative, then headline. But then if you're on TikTok, you see the creative, you see the video itself.
Yeah.
And also, maybe the other question is, what do they process much quicker? And what do they process first? They probably don't process that copy first. They probably process the thing that's flashing in front of their eyes because that's easier than looking at a copy and starting to read it, because they know that their mind now needs to mentally work to actually read the copy and process that. So I think it's more like, what do they process first? It's usually the creative, because the creative, I mean, there's studies done showing that creatives, image or video gets processed by the brain a lot quicker than copy and text that people would engage with.
Yeah, let's just talk about, 100%, man. I would love to just round off with some things that people can test. So we've touched on the frameworks, but if the message is not working, what is the psychological factors that you think people can improve on? Because we can say, hey, go test different creatives, test your copy, test your headline. But I feel like we need to give them some framework that will allow them to get the most out of their testing. So if something is not working, it's usually because there's a psychological disconnect of some sorts. So I think from my side is like, if someone's saying, hey, my ad is not working, and you let's hypothetically pretend that your audience and everything else is nailed down, then it's like, okay, well, people are not resonating with this message. And the message consists of three components: the creative, the headline, and the blurb copy. How would someone go about improving their copy?
Yeah.
And maybe just one or two quick touch points on that. And how would someone go about improving their creative? One or two quick bullet points on that. And how would someone go about trying to improve the headlines?
Yeah. So I think from a copy standpoint, one of the things you're going to be looking at naturally is the link click-through rate. And if that's low and it's showing you that, look, I probably need to improve my copy, then what you need to do is you can either use the strategy of the pull versus the push factor. You can test out, what happens if my copy comprises, to start off with, offers and specifying who it's for? Or maybe I can test the angle of pull, meaning I'm creating curiosity and I'm drawing them in. You could even test very short copy versus very long copy. Some people don't necessarily do that often. And I think some questions even comes like, do I do long copy? Do I do short copy? It's important to test either one of them. But it also depends on the product that you're selling. If you're selling a high ticket item, you might have to put in longer copy. But if you're selling a product that's maybe $500, $200, it's not really going to, you know, someone doesn't have to spend hours thinking about it and how it's going to impact the, you know, groceries for the rest of the month, then you could really focus on short copy. But again, you have to test these different elements: short copy, long copy, push factor, pull factor, pain point, solution, and offer. You could even do it that way. And so these are the dynamics that I would look at and try and test out myself to see what sort of copy variations work and what sort of different formats of copy that I can use in my ads. From a creative point of view, you could test out a still image versus an actual video, right? You could test out different colors, background colors. I mean, you could put a product there and simply test out a different background of that same product, you'll be surprised at how one actually resonates better than another.
And I can tell you now, I test this for ourselves all the time. And every time I do this test, every 6 months or so, I see white backgrounds outperform. And I can tell you now, tasting different backgrounds for us every couple of months, because I'm like, is this creative still working? Is it not working? The first thing I change is the background, funny enough, and white backgrounds outperform darker backgrounds for us all the time. I can't say if that's for everybody. Mm. The brands that I have tested it back way back when I still, you know, were responsible for managing client accounts, I can tell you now, white backgrounds always did better. I don't know if that's still the case for everybody else. It's still the same case for us, though. That's that I can say.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. But I mean, yeah, you could test out the different backgrounds. You could test out an image versus a video or a GIF.
Copy in the creative. Are you being clear about what people are actually going to get? Are you creating curiosity? Are you asking maybe an open-ended question that makes them want to click through? Exactly. Are you putting the offer up there so that they can understand the value? And then the headline, I'm assuming it's like, you can do offer, you can do curiosity, you can do something like a compelling headline that's like a proper direct response headline, or you can do all caps, or you can do all lowercase. just to get people's attention. It's like subject lines. Like when I write a subject line in all lowercase, which looks extremely unprofessional, I get a higher open rate. Mm. So it's like, okay, well, do I want to look professional, or do I want more people to click and actually become leads? Mm. So it's maybe just asking yourself all these questions and testing all those nuances.
Absolutely. And I mean, the headline, you can always just look at it from your creative point of view and the copy. And you just need to make sure that that headline is supporting what's in front of the people, that they're that what the people are seeing in front of them.
100%. I love it. Thanks so much for all the information today. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And yeah, if you've got any questions or comments, just leave them wherever you're watching, Facebook, YouTube. Leave a comment, and hopefully we can get back to you if you've got a specific question. I want to thank you for your time. All the best. We'll see you guys in the next episode. Cheers.